Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 24th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, USDA has issued a new set of orders to its meat inspectors, and a member of the House of Representatives simply says Japan is playing politics with the BSE issue. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. We'll hear of a commentary from the Farm Bureau a bit later in the afternoon, and then just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report. So tell me about this corn pit and what happened there today. A nickel higher in the May contract, finished that at 223 and a quarter. The September's at 239 and three quarters, were up 4 and a quarter. And the nearby contract, of course, was up a nickel as well at 213 and a quarter.
Well, we saw some fun buying today, Todd. Sort of slow to start off with, but, you know, by about noon, FEMAT had bought about 2,000 March, J.P. Morgan, 1,000 D, ABN AMRO about 800 March, and CAR about 1,000 March. They also added about another couple thousand during the last probably 10 minutes. Then they pushed above the, tried to go above the 100-day moving average at 213. You know, Informa come out with their acreage guesstimations here, and I think that it had a little bit to do with it. They were increasing the bean acres 3.96 million acres and decreasing the corn acres 2.34. That, along with some dryness in the wheat areas, Texas 85% poor to very poor in the wheat ratings down there. You know, the wheat sort of pulled the corn, and along with that, then the you know, the fun buying today just definitely helped pop this corn up a little bit.
You know, as you move this corn a bit higher, and we talked about this on Commodity Week over the weekend, when you look at the December contract and it traded where to where did it finish for the day?
It
was up at 249
and
a quarter, or something, half, I think, up there.
Went to 50 and a quarter on the high of the day.
Yeah, when it gets above 250, are you in the idea that producers ought to be pulling the trigger on some new crop sales?
You know, I wish I could say that I waited till 250 to pull all the triggers. For right now, you know, if they haven't done some, yes, it's a definitely good place to have some sold. I think that, you know, barring a drought or something along the way, that these are going to be levels will be higher than where we're at because of our carryout situation, what's going on. But, you know, like I say, we're pretty comfortable where we're at now. We wish we'd waited till now, but we didn't on all of it.
And, of course, as we look at this, can these kinds of up moves, a nickel on this day, be sustained? Do you think this is something that will continue on for a couple of days, or is it a one-day aberration?
Well, you know, that's sort of the question. We did close very technically strong with the strong close today, you know, closed slightly above the 100-day moving average, so we took those out. It looks like there should be some good technical support here as things go. You know, there's the talk about buying acres. It's too early to buy acres, but it's a nice thought. I think that, you know, we just aren't going down or falling out of bed because of the desire to buy acres and the uncertainty about moisture. You know, we're hearing reports from southern Iowa where they have been tiling over the last week, putting anhydrous, and it's very, very dry in those areas. Just got back from Texas and talked to a lot of people from down that area, and there's some areas that are just tremendously dry. So, you know, the country is and moisture deficit in a lot of areas, and you know, with the La Nina talk and that coming on, why it does put a little weather premium maybe back into this market. You know, we also have the South American weather, which is just a little bit. You know, we're seeing some dry areas in Argentina and around. They did get some good rains last week, but we'll see where they took some of the. Down 15% in Paraná on their bean estimate because of some of the dryness that's happened there. So we're seeing quite a bit of weather problems or weather problems being talked about anyhow, Todd.
Given all those potential weather problems, fundamentally it remains that we have a 2.4 billion bushel carryout for the corn, and that's well above the 2.1 billion bushels that we carried in from the last year, and we're still trading above levels that we did at last year.
you know, like I say, we've got a lot of carry out. That is a fact. You know, the fact we don't have is what we're going to produce, but the genetics on these seeds are just so much better than they used to be, and odds are going to be very high that we're going to have a good carryout again.
It's interesting, as we watch the trade today, and Dave Dickey tells me that I believe you've mentioned the 100-day on the December a couple of times, but the 20 and the 50 were also crossed on this day. And on the other side of this, in the bean pit, there were outside down days for both the March and the November contracts.
Yeah, you know, of course, it doesn't look like China will be doing much more buying before the Lunar New Year comes in, so that sort of takes them out of the market. And they're the wild card, the one that likes to, pop things up. On the other hand, we had Oil World reducing the production for Brazil from 56 down to 56 from 56.5 million. But they also increased Argentina from 39.8 to 40. So a lot of stuff going on there, but just not the support with the, probably increased acreage, probably the big supplies we got out there, and probably China backing away from the market for a while now because they seem to have, booked ahead a little bit on this on the last run on the beans, and the crush margins aren't quite as good over there. So they're backing off from their purchases here for probably the next week or so.
Off day at the Mercantile Exchange?
Yes, it was. Cattle and hogs both took a hit. The hogs took the early hit and basically bled over into the cattle and stayed pretty weak on both of them. Very quiet cash trade in the cattle lows, so the bid and offer's quite a bit apart. Look for some trade to happen a little bit lower towards the end of the week.
Wayne, we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's Mike Sola says tonight in the northern sections of the two-state region, it'll be cloudy, some scattered snow showers and flurries will arrive. In eastern Illinois and in central Indiana, mostly cloudy. A chance for rain possibly mixed with snow tonight. Elsewhere, to be partly cloudy, lows will range from 20 in the far north to near 30 in southeastern Indiana. Mike says tomorrow in northern Indiana will be partly to mostly cloudy with some snow showers elsewhere. Partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range tomorrow from 32 in northern Indiana to 48 in far southern Illinois. Dave Dickey's here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Japanese officials have given the U.S. BSE marching orders. Find out why banned spinal material showed up in a U.S. shipment of veal and prevent it from reoccurring. USDA is calling it an isolated incident and saying the firm that exported the meat was inexperienced in dealing with international customers. USDA Secretary Mike Johans says he shared a 12-step plan last Friday with Japanese officials to prevent a similar incident.
I also had an opportunity to speak with Minister Nakagawa. That was something that we intended to do. We had a good conversation. I expressed to him my regrets about this incident and indicated to him that as we have looked into this situation, it appears that this was just a case where somebody made a mistake, overlooked what was in three boxes of beef that were shipped to Japan. And I assured him that we were going to do everything that we could do to be transparent and provide him with information.
U.S. Agricultural Undersecretary J.B. Penn today says it's premature to speculate on a date when U.S. beef shipments to Japan will resume. Japan halted imports last Friday. The suspension came just 1 month after Japan lifted a 2-year ban on U.S. beef. House Ag Chairman Bob Goodlatte, a Republican from Virginia, took Japan to task over the weekend, saying the ban was nothing more than politics. And in his words, no way to conduct international trade. Maybe we should say to the Japanese that some of the autos they send to the U.S. have defective brakes, so we'll ban all Japanese autos. Meanwhile, Japan says it has its 22nd domestic case of mad cow disease. The Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries says a cow, a female Holstein, was 5 years and 4 months old and thus born before Japan's 2001 ban on the feeding of meat and bone meal to cattle. Canadian officials are saying 3-year-old grain may have been the cause of a case of BSE in a 6-year-old crossbred cow from Alberta. Canada instituted its ban on the use of cattle parts and feed in 1997, 3 years before the BSE-infected cow was born. Canadian officials say very small amounts of feed purchased before the ban can be retained on farms and lead to infection years later. Canadian Food Inspection Agency Chief Veterinary Officer Brian Evans.
You know, I think we have to recognize the fact that, again, this animal, 69 months of age, is still at that threshold. We've seen animals, our youngest animal previous to this was 70 months, so a 1 month difference. What that tells us, the age of the animal is the critical issue. What it tells us is this animal is in that peak period between 4 and 6 years of age to demonstrate demonstration of clinical signs of BSE. And it also tells us that this animal was exposed to a very, very low dose of BSE given that long incubation period. The fact that that falls within that age group is the encouraging news that continues to come out of our surveillance efforts, that in fact, if the feed ban was not working effectively, then we would see progressively more and more and more cases of BSE being found, and the age of those animals would be considerably younger, down to 24 to 30 months of age. That's not happening in Canada.
USDA says the U.S. border will remain open to Canadian beef. National Farmers Union President Dave Fredrickson says that's the wrong course of action.
I'm deeply concerned about today's announcement of yet another case of BSE in Canada. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Mike Johans should suspend all imports of Canadian cattle until we can be assured that Canada has its problems under control and it can meet U.S. meat inspection standards.
Fewer Canadian cattle are scheduled to be tested for BSE this year. In 2004, Canadian producers presented 57,000 animals for testing. The 2005 target is 30,000 cattle. The House Ag Committee will begin to review the 2002 Farm Bill with hearings in North Carolina and Alabama in early February. The hearings will provide an opportunity for all those involved in agricultural policy, including farmers, ranchers, agribusiness, and government officials, to comment on the 2002 Farm Bill. Lawmakers say they will take testimony on all 10 titles of the 2002 bill: commodity programs, conservation, trade, nutrition programs, credit, rural development, research, biotechnology, forestry, energy, and a miscellaneous category that includes marketing issues. The U.S. continues to prod the European Union to put forward an offer to make deeper cuts in its import tariffs for agricultural products to break the logjam in World Trade Organization talks. U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman says a sweetened EU offer is the key to a successful conclusion of World Trade talks this year. Portman says the EU's current offer is not acceptable. The EU is calling on cuts in agricultural tariffs an average of 39% while excluding 142 products from deep cuts. Former USDA trade advisor Paul Drazik says it's unlikely the WTO will meet an April 30th deadline to reach a trade deal if the EU remains inflexible.
The single most important issue on market access is the number of sensitive products that will be allowed. And if the Europeans are successful at maintaining the number at 8% of all tariff lines, then this negotiation might not amount to very much.
Drazek says the good news is that the April deadline can be extended at least for a little while.
I think a lot of people will conclude that the April deadline isn't really the ultimate last-ditch deadline, that if they don't make that deadline, they still have a few more months before they really drop off the precipice. And because of that, my experience is that there's never an agreement before there absolutely has to be an agreement. I personally am doubtful they'll make the April deadline, and it might not be until August or September, which I think really is the last chance.
EU and U.S. trade ministers will meet at the World Economic Forum. That kicks off tomorrow. Look for the subjects of tax cuts, energy prices, and the rising cost of health care to occur in President Bush's State of the Union address next week. The president previewed these three domestic themes in his most recent weekly radio broadcast, pointing out he will push for Congress to make recent tax cuts permanent. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to join Dave this evening at the Normal West High School in Normal, Illinois, for another one of WILL AM 580's Ag Outlook panel meetings. This one sponsored by Bates Commodities. That's Kurt Kimmel and Pete Manhart. Tonight they'll be joined with Dave Hightower of the Hightower Report, Steve Freed of ADM Research, and Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. Should be a great evening to get out to the Normal West High School there in Normal at 7 o'clock. This is absolutely free. For another one of the WILL AM 580 Ag Outlook panels, be sure to visit our website at WILL.UIUC.edu. Just click on AM and then Agriculture for all of the information on upcoming panels in your local area. Well, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkis says farmers are gearing up for Food Checkout Week.
Food Checkout Week 2006 is January 29th through February 4th. During this week, Farm Bureau members across the nation will creatively mark the time of year when most Americans have earned enough disposable income to pay for all the food they eat, both at home and away from home, for the entire year. The bounty of safe, affordable food produced by America's farmers benefits consumers who pay less for food than citizens of any other country in the world. On average, Americans spend just 9.5% of their disposable income on food, according to the Agriculture Department statistics. This means it takes only 35 days or 5 weeks for most Americans to earn enough money to buy their groceries for the entire year. What's even more interesting is that the percentage of disposable personal income spent for food in the United States has declined over the last 35 years due to increased standards of living. The last time Americans used 12% or more of their disposable income to purchase food was in 1983. In 1984, the average dropped slightly less than 12%, and it has steadily declined since then. For the past 9 years, Americans have spent an average of less than 10% of their disposable income on food. According to USDA research, food is more affordable today due to a widening gap between growth in incomes and the amount of money spent for food. The decrease in percentage of income used for food purchases is especially noteworthy since trends indicate Americans are buying more expensive, convenient food items for preparation at home, as well as more food away from home. When you consider the average price increases that Americans have absorbed for vehicles, gasoline, and other consumer products over the past 20 years, the cost of food seems like a real bargain. Our nation's increasing standard of living would certainly be reduced without our safe, abundant, and affordable domestic food supply. Food in America remains affordable, any way you slice it, thanks to the American farmers who produce it. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of the station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. This is WILL AM 580. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather. Your local newscast is next.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Pretrial arguments in the case of three children who drowned in Clinton Lake more than 2 years ago returned today to testing of the car they were in when they died. Prosecutors want to use a video of the tests conducted 3 days after the drownings in the upcoming murder trial of Maurice Legrone Jr. Legrone's attorneys argue the tests are unscientific and could confuse jurors. Congressman Tim Johnson says it will take a concerted effort from lawmakers and consumers to support renewable energy sources and lessen dependence on oil. The Urbana Republican met with officials from the Public Interest Research Group today for a forum on environmental issues. Johnson touted legislation he's backing that would mandate that automobiles get 40 miles to the gallon. It would also call for greater use of hybrid cars and alternative energy sources like wind power. Governor Rod Blagojevich says he'll take Keno off the negotiating table if it means state lawmakers will support his road and school construction plan. In a letter to Illinois House Minority Leader Tom Cross, Blagojevich says he's willing to forego the Keno idea as long as legislators work to find other ways to pay for the $3.2 billion construction plan he proposed 2 weeks ago. An IRS agent says former Illinois Governor George Ryan failed to report income totaling just over $80,000. Sherry Schindler testified today at Ryan's corruption trial that the income involved included travel expenses to see out-of-town sports events and gifts to his family paid for with campaign money. Prosecutors pushed to rest their case against Ryan and co-defendant Larry Warner tomorrow after 4 months of testimony. A West Lafayette, Indiana police lieutenant is being demoted and suspended without pay for 30 days for lying about a crash in his take-home vehicle last summer. Police Chief Dan Marvin had recommended that the officer, Matt Coddington, be fired. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now to take a look at the agricultural weather by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don.
Hello there.
Tell me about South America. Let's start in Argentina and the conditions that crops are moving through this growing season.
Well, it has gotten a little bit warmer in Argentina and also a little bit drier. Now, some areas of Argentina had heat unit accumulation that was a little bit behind normal. These warmer temperatures will help, but there's not much rain in the forecast. Now, a little further north into Brazil, it's a little bit different. Rain chances in Brazil are going to be higher, and it's going to be a little bit cooler in Brazil over the next week or two, where their heat unit accumulation actually going to lag a little bit. So Argentina warmer and drier, still some moisture and a bit cooler in Brazil.
We seem to have some discrepancy about whether their growing season has been fairly normal and fairly decent for the crops there, or whether they're headed into a dry and a suffering period.
Well, I don't see, other than what normally will happen in mid to late summer, which you can get warmer and drier, but whether or not it's going to be a prolonged hot or drier spell, I wouldn't be in that camp. I would trend towards more of a more typical growing season by the time the season's done.
On the dry side of things, I would suppose you'd be on the very dry in Texas and parts of Oklahoma.
But the news is good. They actually did in east and northeast Texas and areas of Oklahoma this weekend finally get some rain. And the storm track coming off the Pacific is now going to track further south. There is some rain in the future for portions of East Texas and Oklahoma. It won't get very far into central Texas and Oklahoma. Those areas still will be suffering from some dryness. But the far eastern areas in the next week will get some moisture.
And here in the Midwest, our temperatures were supposed to fall off this afternoon, but we're still setting at 45 degrees.
Yeah, well, it is going to be getting cooler, but nothing significantly cold. We're still cut off from any Arctic airflow, but the storm track is going to get a lot more active now, and the odds of precipitation are going to be very high along and east of the Mississippi for the next week or two. We're going to see several storm systems moving on through, bringing a wide variety of rain and ice and snow, but there's still no connection to any real cold air. So it's probably going to be a little bit of a wintry mix as it comes through, but it does look more moist.
Not bad. Sounds like winter, and if you can keep the really cold temperatures out, we can live through that easily.
We'll do that. And, you know, speaking of that, it looks like Europe and Russia and many areas of Asia for another week will see much below normal temperatures. So there's a lot of cold air on the other side of the globe. Something that needs to be watched. It could sneak in later, maybe February, in parts of the U.S., but we don't see that at least yet.
Don, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us here on the Closing Market Reports on Tuesday afternoons. Be sure to turn in tomorrow morning at 8:49. That for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis, the weather reports, right there on our worldwide website. Just go to WILL.UIUC.EDU, click on AM, and then Agriculture. Along with all that information, you'll find the list of Ag Panel Outlook meetings that are located throughout the area, including this evening's meeting in the Normal West High School in Normal, Illinois. Starts at 7 o'clock. Dave Dickey hosting that program. ADM Investor Services reference folks. Steve Fried will be along, as well as David Hightower, the Hightower Report, and Dan Zwicker. This evening at 7 o'clock at the Normal West High School in Normal, Illinois. That's absolutely free. If you'd like to, you can join them tonight. You have a good evening. I'm Todd Gleason.